This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Dr. Doug Fridsma. He is a medical doctor and a PhD, so he's got a whole lot of talent here. He is the Chief Science Officer at the Office of the National Coordinator up at HHS. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much.
Well, this guy's got so many brains, he's a wheelbarrow to carry him around in, you know? I mean, there's a whole lot of degrees and a whole lot of education. And what he's done is he's taken all this formal education and all this practical application, he's applying it to help make things better for the federal IT professional, better for all American citizens. So it's really an honor to have him in the studio here. When we're going to talk about we're going to focus on a topic called interoperability. And that's probably an 80-hour topic. We're going to squeeze it into 1 hour. But before we begin, tell us more about your background, doctor, and how you wound up working for the ONC.
Well, thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here. So up until just a couple of years ago, I was a practicing physician. I worked at the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona. But prior to that, I had done a lot of work academically on trying to figure out ways that we can use computers to help improve patient care. And so my degree at Stanford was in biomedical informatics. It's a scientific degree related to computer science.
Sounds like an easy major.
Yeah.
It's an easy A.
So it was, you know, combining medicine and computer technology to try to figure out a way to use that to advance patient care.
Yeah. No, great, great. And so you combined that when I got a medical degree too.
Well, I actually did my medical degree first.
Wow.
So I did my medical degree, and after completing my residency, then I went back and I did my computer science degree at that point.
Well, you got all kinds of practical experience for this. So how long have you been at the ONC, and what could drag you here from Arizona and the West Coast? I mean, I don't know what.
Well, you know, I've been here about 3 years, but I think it was an opportunity to really start to apply those skills to trying to solve some of the national problems that we've got. I mean, in 2008, when I first got started in some of the work with ONC, you know, the adoption of electronic health records was about 17%. And through meaningful use and the high-tech act, we've actually been able to increase that to almost 62% at this point.
You know, I had Todd Park in the studio here, and I said, well, you know, Todd, you could do just about anything. Why'd you wind up here? He said, because I want to make a difference. And he was very honest and sincere about that. He has a wife and a child, and or I think maybe two now, but he's looking at his kids going, maybe I could use my skill set to make a difference. And he is. I'm sure he can talk about interoperability as well as anyone. But it's kind of interesting to have people with your talent actually kind of applying it in the federal government to very practical areas that can impact so many different people in so many different ways. The topic we're going to focus in on today is a topic of interoperability. And I'm sure if we have 50,000 listeners, we get 50,000 definitions of that term. So let's take a stab here and try to define interoperability from maybe a healthcare IT perspective.
So I think, you know, interoperability really has two parts. Interoperability is really the ability of two different systems to be able to exchange information. So information goes from one system to the other. That's the first part. The second part about interoperability is that when that information is received by the second system, that system can take that information and use it and incorporate it or do something with it. So interoperability really has these two parts. The first part is exchange, the ability to move things from one system to the other. And the second part is use, to be able to use that information for some useful purpose. And I think that's one reason that there's a lot of different definitions of interoperability, because people want to take that information and they want to use it for lots of different things. And as a result, one person may say, I just want to take that information and file it away in my computer system. And that's what interoperability is to them. Somebody else may say, I want to take that information and I want to do clinical decision support and I want to write electronic prescriptions and I want to do all these other things. So those two people both are talking about exchange and use, but they have different definitions of what that use is. And as a result, sometimes we get into confusion about whether we have interoperability according to one definition or another.
Everyone seems to pour different meaning into words. And when I think of interoperability, I think of something maybe reducing redundancy, maybe increasing speed, and maybe improving flow. So I think of those, it sounds like sports analogy here, something speed, flow, and reducing movement. But I think redundancy is really important. I think that's what interoperability is all about. Well, let's get on the same page. Well, that's a nice metaphor, but you know, it's technically difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and I think that's the end result. I mean, the benefits that you get to interoperability is reduction in repeated tests, the ability to improve care because you have more information available to you that you wouldn't have otherwise had at your fingertips. I also think it helps engage patients and other people that are part of the healthcare system, because if they have an opportunity to view their information, to download it, to transmit it to other personal healthcare records or the like, I think that's when you start to get the real advantage of engaging patients in their care.
I normally read about sports and March Madness and basketball teams, but I occasionally read about healthcare IT. I pulled up an article on the top five technology trends in healthcare, March 2013, and 1, 2, 3, number 4 is interoperability. So maybe we're stumbling on an important topic here, huh?
Yeah, well, I think we are beginning to recognize that, you know, healthcare is no longer a cottage industry in which you've got an individual provider giving care to a patient, and that's all you really need. You know, we've got a connected system, if you will, of people that are providing care. And so you have different doctors and healthcare systems, and people are mobile, they move around, and they have different insurance carriers. I think it's really important that the information follow the patient and that can move with them, because that's how we get that better care that we want.
Doctor, I'm not going to use a four-letter word. I'm going to use a three-letter word and may get the same reaction out of you. The word is EMR, electronic medical record. So interoperability, so you have one electronic record at the hospital, and then there's a physician you see. So is it electronic health record interoperate? Is that one facet of it?
Well, I certainly, you know, in the work that we've been doing at the Office of the National Coordinator, we've actually made some great progress towards making the hospital system talk to the systems that your private personal doctor might use in their office or their clinic. So we've established over the course of the last year or so a national standard for exchange about how to move information from one system to another, as well as a national standard for how to structure that information to support a care summary. So you've been seen by the emergency room and you need to get that information to your doctor. Having a standard way to do that so that the system on one end can also read it on the other end, that's one of the functionalities that is going to be built into electronic health records in the coming year.
My cousin had a heart attack last week, shocked me, and I'm sure that when he was in the hospital, he had to have some lab work done. I mean, I'm not even a physician, but I know it had to happen. And so maybe this went off to a lab. So all of a sudden, we're adding another variable. And here you have electronic health record, okay. And then he has a private physician, and then he goes, so another degree of complexity here. So the labs have to be involved in this too, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, the top three things we worked on in the past year and a half or so has been a standard for exchange to move that information around, a standard to summarize the patient care visit so that we have that summary record that can be exchanged. And then the third thing was a standard for how laboratories can be represented and exchanged as well. And, you know, as a physician, the things that are really important in taking care of a patient is you need to know what their problem list is. You need to know what their medications are. You need to make sure if there's been recent laboratory tests that have been performed, and allergies. And those were the first four things that we really focused on in terms of trying to get those to a point where you can exchange and use that information for other purposes.
In March, there's March Madness, and they talk about basketball. Now, basketball has a standard. It's 10 feet high. And there's standards for healthcare as well. Now, I'm sure the NCAA has some kind of a standard for the size of the basketball court and if it's wood or whatever it's made of and the height of the basket. We know that. And those 240-pound guys hang off of that rim, which fascinates me. But there are standards involved in interoperability as well. just take a few seconds here. Give me a 10-second overview. Then we'll take a break and come back and talk more about standards.
So I think, you know, we can talk about the five things that we standardize at the ONC. We standardize meaning, content, transport, security, and services. And we can talk a little bit more about what each one of those things are and how it's important to patients to have that those kinds of standards available.
I wish we had rehearsed that. I didn't know you had that good an answer. Good answer, isn't it? I just tossed that out. I just thought that this basketball analogy might work, but those are the standards involved, all five of those. Let's take a little break. We come back, talk more about standards and interoperability and how this impacts not only the healthcare IT professionals listening, but the truck drivers and the people working in stores in Manhattan, because everyone's getting impacted by healthcare IT. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio is Dr. Doug Fridsma. He's the Chief Science Officer at the Office of the National Coordinator. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio live is Dr. Doug Fridsma. He is the Chief Science Officer for the Office of the National Coordinator at HHS. And there are 1,000 topics we could discuss. We're talking about interoperability. And before the break, we talked about standards. And I came up with some silly story about the NCAA and setting a standard for 10 feet for the basketball hoop. And people all across the country and across the world, they comply with that standard. And we were about to talk about how these standards are introduced in the world of medicine, healthcare IT, and interoperability. So doctor, does someone at ONC have a gavel and stamp on the table and go, okay, this is a standard for that, and everyone has to comply? How are these standards developed?
So we work very, very closely with the community. We have what we call our Health IT Standards Committee, which is an advisory committee to the Office of the National Coordinator, and they make recommendations to us as to the standards that we should adopt as part of the Meaningful Use program. But I think more fundamentally, we have we believe our role is to convene the vendors and to convene the patients and to convene the providers to get a sense of what are the problems that they're trying to solve, and is there a way that we can help assist them in converging on a common way of doing things so that we can begin to get to interoperability. So we use something called our Standards and Interoperability Framework as a, you know, it's an example of government as a platform. What we do is we just provide telephone, and teleconferencing services and wikis and discussion groups, and we help to organize the communities so that they can make good choices. And then when they've done that, it's a matter of them telling us what is important to that, to getting to interoperability. So fundamentally, the standards are developed by the community, they're recommended by the community, and our job is simple. We simply listen to the communities and try to find the best standards to support the things that they're working
on. That seemed to work from maybe more in a larger or an enterprise perspective rather than a cottage perspective, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I think we do have to move from a recognition of this large scale system that we're trying to create interoperability in.
There is a nationally known group called HIMSS, and they have local chapters. There's one just meets right over here in Roslyn. And they're going to talk about interoperability here in April, in a couple weeks. But I'm sure if you go to their national meetings, you're going to stumble on this word health information exchange. And there may be some listeners that think they know everything, and oh, I know exactly what a health information exchange is. Get together and talk about blood pressure. Well, I mean, it got something to do with that, but maybe for the benefit of our listeners, doctor, you could define what a HIE, health information exchange, is and what it's got to do with interoperability.
So, you know, health information exchange can be both a noun and a verb. So as a verb, health information exchange is really that first part of interoperability. But there's a number of organizations that have developed to help assist people in getting information to flow from one place to another. And those are called health information exchanges. Oftentimes, they work as a hub, if you will, to connect lots of different organizations and groups together and to route that information around so that people have access to it. Sometimes they add extra services. They're able to, you know, identify important trends. They're able to do public health reporting. They're able to help consolidate information so that patients can have access to that information in a central location. So there's a lot of different models out there, but I think fundamentally the noun health information exchanges help assist the verb, which is health information exchange.
different software, different places. Is that what it tries to juggle?
Yeah, and I think, you know, using the national standards that these communities have identified and that the advisory committees have recommended, using those standards and as a way of connecting all those pieces is really where those health information exchanges can help.
You know, I'm probably the only person on the planet that watches broadcast news, and you always hear, well, this state did this, and this state is starting to do this, and this state, as far as health information exchanges go. So I think our listeners have to think of regional, statewide, and national. There's three different levels of this different software, different places. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we like to say that, you know, information, you know, to get information to flow, information flows at the speed of trust. And the thing is that you trust your kind of local community and you trust your providers that are giving you care. So there are going to be local networks and regional areas in which that kind of information can flow around. We don't have the intention of having a giant database in the sky in which all this information flows. I think our role within the federal government is to help establish the standards that will enable exchange to occur and to let that exchange be driven by the business opportunities that vendors and providers have and the needs that patients have with regard to making their information flow from one place to another.
There's a movie and Tom Cruise famously said, "Show me the money." I guess from a physician's perspective, a physician would say, "Well, show me the healthy patient." I mean, okay, all this fun, interoperability is fine and these standards and these big fancy terms and complicated words, but you know, are we engaging the patient? Are we making them healthier? Does an electronic health record, you know, does it resonate with the, I guess in my world it's the end user, in your world it's the patient. It's the person changing a tire in Chicago, isn't it? I mean, does this help with patient engagement?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think every patient probably has either themselves or someone else experienced a lack of interoperability in the care that they receive. So they get a diagnosis of something like cancer, and they need to take the images from one system and bring it to their oncologist so that they can review it. Oftentimes, there is no good way to transport that information. There are standards out there that can help us with that, but they're not consistently used or consistently applied. And so, you know, part of what we need to do is to not have patients' information locked away in a proprietary or a non-standardized electronic health record. If you see another doctor and they use a different electronic health record system, I think every patient has the right to take the information out of the one system and move it over into the other system because they need that information so that their physician and their doctors can take good care of them.
And we haven't come to an agreement about the 10-foot rule, have we? We really don't know how to define electronic health records. A lot of different people are defining it, and you're kind of like, you're watching the basketball game take place where there's a lot of teams going after each other, and someone's going to figure it out, and in the United States of America, sooner or later, someone's going to figure out the most efficient way to do it, and we're in kind of the early stages right now, aren't we? It's kind of, people are watching different players.
Well, the thing is that, it's sort of an old joke in the health IT community, but the wonderful thing about standards and health IT is that there are so many to choose from. And so our job is really to get the groups together and say, listen, there are three or four different ways that people are doing exactly the same thing. You as a community, help us understand what would be the one way that everybody could agree upon doing this. And if everybody does it in the same way, we reduce the cost, we reduce the complexity, and we sort of enable that free flow of information exchange that we'd like to see.
I tell my students that years ago, when they were just starting to build tall buildings, 10, 15 stories, and designing elevators, one of the people decided that elevators should be round. And they built their building, so they thought the elevator is most efficient with you round, but it turned out that they turned out to be square. And so it was a design change. It was a standard that was implemented. It was the most efficient way. There might have been 10 different designs for elevators, and one kind of worked out. And so electronic health records, we're looking at the square versus the round now and just trying to, well, so what's the best way, the most efficient? Maybe in 15 years, my kids will look back and go, well, everyone's got one of those, Dad.
Well, you know, I love the building analogy because I think our job from ONC's perspective is to allow people to build buildings. Our job isn't to sort of construct one giant building in which everybody has to live. In fact, our job is less about building a building than it is about planning a city, if you will. So our job is to figure out what's the basic infrastructure for roads and electricity and water and sewer. What are the building codes that make that building safe for people to get into the building and out? How do we make sure that as people build electronic health records, which may be the equivalent of those buildings, how do we make sure that they do them according to the building codes that we think are important? And what is the infrastructure that we need around there? What are the zoning laws? How do we make sure that we've got a vibrant cityscape that allows that information to be exchanging rather than building one giant building that doesn't serve anyone's purpose because we've tried to be all things to all people?
You know, I walk into a building in New York, I hit 10. I walk into a building in San Francisco, it's the same icons there. I understand 10 means, that means the 10th floor. I get it. It's not a surprise, and it's a standard way of allowing growth of electronic health records and hopefully the health of all the people in the United States and possibly the world here. Let's take a break. We'll get back, talk more about HIMSS and a local meeting where you can talk about interoperability. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Dr. Doug Frisma, Chief Science Officer, Office of the National Coordinator. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Doug Frisma. He's the Chief Science Officer, Office of the National Coordinator up at HHS. Special guest, we also have a gentleman who works with HIMSS. I mentioned earlier there's a group of folks that are dedicated to healthcare information systems called HIMSS, based in Chicago. They have thousands and thousands of members. Their LinkedIn group has 140,000 members. They just had a big event once a year in New Orleans this time. And they have a local chapter, meets in Roslyn, so it's easy access for the metro. And in April, they're going to have an event with Dr. Frisma and several other people and talk about interoperability. So this is your chance to sit in a room, raise your hand, and ask a question and find out exactly what it means to you, what it means to your company, or what it means to your cousin in Chicago who's changing the tire and is worried about his health coverage and how it's going to change with all these electronic health records. We have Barry Dickman in the studio today. Barry, tell us about your background and how you work with HIMSS, please.
Hi, John. Thank you very much. My name is Barry Dickman. I'm a senior consultant with Aegis.net. I'm also the co-chair for the HIMSS National Capital Area Programs Committee. And John, I want to thank you for this opportunity to provide a brief overview of the upcoming and future events that are coming out of the National Capital Area. Our next HIMSS chapter event will be held April 18th at the Key Bridge Marriott in Roslyn, Virginia. And the topic is Federal Health IT Interoperability and How It Tests Meaningful Use. We have a very distinguished group of panelists that are going to be participating in this event. We have Dr. Doug Frisma with ONC, Dr. Sung Moon with OSERA, the open source EHR agent, Robert Anthony from CMS, and Carla Smith, who is the HIMSS Executive Vice President, coming in to sit on a panel and address questions from our audience and participants on federal health IT interoperability. So thank you very much.
Because I'm a radio guy, I got to say it's HIMSS, H-I-M-S-S. It's not like in church, it's HIMSS. And you can go to HIMSS, H-I-M-S-S-N-A-N-C-A, that's HIMSS-N-C-A.org, and find out about the event, register, come on down. Last time there's like 200 people, a real good group, everything from, students to contractors to other physicians. I met a physician from the Pentagon, and he was working on homeless veterans. And he comes to the HIMSS meeting to try to get an inspiration, find out new ways to use health records to track these homeless veterans. I think it was just it's a great group of people. And thanks for that promotion there, Barry. I think you should take advantage of this. Let's go back to Dr. Frisma and talk more about interoperability and testing things. You know, there's things called test pilots. I happened to meet a famous test pilot by the name of Fred Hayes. He astronaut, and he'd test these airplanes, and they wouldn't know if the airplanes would blow up or not. He'd go out and he'd test them, and he became an astronaut. And I guess you have to test interoperability and test different ways that systems get together. So I think this is probably the phase you're at right now, just looking at these different ways and methods and how electronic health records, what's the best way for them to coordinate or exchange information. Is that right?
Yeah. Now, once the community identifies a standard that they think is the right standard to use for exchanging patient information, You know, there's a whole series of things that need to happen. You know, just using the standard isn't enough. You really have to test to make sure that our people are implementing it correctly and have the right functionality available. So we work very closely with National Institute for Standards and Technology, NIST, to develop test suites that allow people to see if their systems can produce the standards in the correct formats. But I think it's more than that. You know, interoperability doesn't happen in a lab. It happens out there in the real world. And so we work very closely with the state health information exchanges. We work very closely with pilot organizations that are trying to really tackle on this cutting edge many of the interoperability challenges.
So the big driver for this is reducing costs for patients, improving healthcare for patients, improved billing. I mean, what's the big driver, would you say?
Well, I think right now, with the meaningful use program, there are incentives that are available to hospitals and to providers that says if you adopt an electronic health record and you can demonstrate that you are meeting quality objectives and certain milestones and goals, there's incentive money. There's money that's available to providers and hospitals that will help offset some of the cost. But I think fundamentally, what we need to be able to drive towards better and better interoperability is our ability to measure quality, for our ability to pay for good outcomes that we have, to make sure that we're tracking those things and paying for doctors who are taking really good care of their patients and patients then who are getting better healthcare as a result.
I think that's a key component. I think you're hinting at the word quality, but boy, easy to say, hard to define, and hard to measure and actually talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think you know one of the challenges is that if you want to measure quality now in a paper-based system, it's really hard. You've got to go through charts and you have to abstract that information. I think in an electronic world, you have the ability to actually generate reports and to take a look and say, well, what is that patient's hemoglobin A1C? How is their diabetes controlled? How is their blood pressure controlled? And be able to actually measure that across the entire population that you've got in your electronic health record. And I think that provides tremendous opportunities, not only for quality, but for doctors to understand what they're doing well, what they need to improve, and actually start to create a system of healthcare learners, if you will, using this technology to improve the care that is delivered.
Last night I was in the kitchen with my wife, and she's sitting at the island. She had her iPhone on and her iPad, and she was juggling both, going back and forth and back and forth. And I look at mobile devices. You know, last year, in the last quarter, 700 million smartphones are sold. Is mobility, mobile devices, is that a barrier? Is it a driver for electronic health records?
Well, I think that for us to be successful in improving healthcare, we have to include mobile devices. And those are primarily done or primarily owned by the patients. The patients have apps to do all sorts of things. And I think we need to be able to provide the standards that allow cell phones and iPads and mobile devices to be able to integrate that information and share that with their providers. Much of the work that we do is to try to unleash the data that's locked away. Todd Park likes to call it lazy data because it's just sitting there. It's not being used for anything. And what we need to do is we need to get rid of lazy data. We need to get information out there. And once we do, that information will drive innovation. People will say, I can format this, I can integrate it with other information, and I can provide value to patients so that they can take their Fitbit and their blood pressure and their upcoming cardiology visit, and they can put them all together and say, this is how I'm making progress towards better care.
I teach, and when I look at my students, when I lecture, the students, you know, they're thinking about 10,000 other things. When I have them write blogs, they're starting to, they have to understand what a blog is and what keywords are and how to promote it. All of a sudden, once they're engaged, they learn. And I think from a physician's perspective, you've got to do something and turn your patients into being worried about their weight and worry about their consumption, their diabetes, and because this engagement seems to be so important. And maybe a smartphone will assist in that engagement, where 5 years ago you wouldn't have someone measure their calories or whether their weight loss, whatever it is, Weight Watcher stuff. But now the mobile device may assist in that.
Yeah, and I think as patients find it fun to sort of see how many steps they've walked or to take a look at calorie counting or having other ways that they can engage in their healthcare, That becomes an exciting opportunity, I think, for physicians. I mean, when I was practicing, it was routine for me to be able to ask patients, you know, as they came in with a problem, what have you read on the internet? What's important to you? And that oftentimes would unleash a whole host of conversations that we otherwise wouldn't have had.
And from a physician's perspective, they don't care if it's Weight Watchers, if it's calories, if it's some magic number of foods. If they're managing their weight and reducing their weight, well, then if it works for them, then it's engagement there, isn't it? And I think there's apps that allow for that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you want is you want an ecosystem of innovation out there, because we don't know what's the best way to do things. And frankly, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. Different things are going to work better for one patient versus another. What we want is even in that sort of heterogeneous environment, to be able to have standards for the data that gets shared so that people can build those apps and they can have a common way of getting that information out of an electronic health record and being able to use it.
We got a break in about 30 seconds, but when I think about large enterprises and healthcare, I think about enterprise architecture. Is that a part of your job too, or is that separate category completely? Just a quick answer, then we'll take a break.
Well, I think enterprise architecture is sort of the blueprints for the building. If we go back to our city analogy, and what we really are focused on is figuring out what those building codes are. So enterprise architect is an important piece of the puzzle, but that's something that I think is within an enterprise, not something that we expect to see nationally.
So it's part of the puzzle, but not necessarily what immediate concern.
Exactly.
Great. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll ask Dr. Frisma about his mobile devices and about his experience and whether or not he's really a card-carrying nerd or not. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, you have Dr. Doug Frisma, Chief Science Officer, the Office of the National Coordinator. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Doug Frisma, Chief Science Officer, the Office of the National Coordinator up at HHS. Today, we're taking one little small part of healthcare IT. We're talking about interoperability. Doctor, many of my listeners engage with my guests through blogs, through Twitter feeds, maybe through the HIMSS meeting coming up. And if they want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is @RayGilroy. Do you have one?
Yeah, so I'm @Fridsma, FRIDSMA.
And if you go there, you find this silly little cartoon of you, and it kind of looks like you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's my, it's me if I was on The Simpsons Show.
Well, that's a guy with an MD and a PhD talking about The Simpsons. Let's put that down in the history book here. Lots of different ways to follow people and learn information. Twitter's one, but blogs are another. If you want to read my blog, and I'll be blogging about this interview, go into Google, type in John Gilroy blog, and you get my blog. Where's your blog?
So we blog on the Buzz blog off of healthit.gov, which is sort of the ONC website. And I generally have a blog every week or so about some topic related to interoperability and some of the challenges that we have.
So if you're a federal healthcare IT professional, you can at least keep up with some of the trends there. And it's free, easily available, do it on the weekends, 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever your schedule happens to be. I ask every one of my guests to perform this very brutal 10-question test to find out if you're actually a card-carrying nerd or not. You know, some people are listening going, well, maybe a doctor, but he really isn't a nerd. Is he a nerd and a doctor? No, that's not. So we'll do these 10 questions to find out exactly where you rank in the nerd scale. First question, doctor. The year you bought your first computer.
I still have it, actually. It was a Mac. Back in 1984 or 5.
Ooh, you get big points for that one.
Something
yeah.
like that.
I had one of my guests have the serial number. He knew the serial number on it. So that's a pretty good point.
I sold it and then I bought it back.
Did you make money on it? You lost
no,
money on that one.
It.
Yeah. And the year your first cell phone?
That I don't remember. But I know it was a flip phone. Motorola flip phone.
And so you don't get points for that because it's not emotional attached to your phone. Do you have your own Twitter feed? Yes. Okay. And you got your own blog? Yes. And do you use any online personal backup?
Yeah, to the cloud.
To the cloud, okay. Yeah. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I have a BlackBerry and I have an iPhone.
A BlackBerry. Well, I don't hear that answer very often. And I guess number of apps in the BlackBerry. I don't know if you can ask that question. Can you ask that question?
No, there's nothing. That's my work phone.
Yeah, that's the next one. And what kind of tablet device do you have?
An iPad.
Okay. And social networking sites you participate in? Facebook, LinkedIn?
Yeah, Facebook, LinkedIn, Those are the usual ones.
Okay. Yeah. And last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Electronic.
Electronic. Well, I'll have to put this through my computer and find out what kind of a category you are as far as a nerd goes. But that 84 Mac is a pretty good indicator that you got some nerd points working.
I think you also have to include how many people used a Lisp Explorer machine by Texas Instruments.
L-I-S-P.
Lisp, yeah.
Many people don't even know what Lisp is. I sure do.
Yeah.
You know, there's a character. There's a character in California. She's named Cher. This is one name. There's a character in the Washington, D.C. area, and he's got one name. It's Farzad. Everyone knows Farzad by just that one name. And I have a quote here. I'm going to ask you to comment on this quote. And the quote from Farzad is, he is as serious as a heart attack about achieving vendor-to-vendor interoperability in exchange in 2013. Do you have any comments on that? You work for Farzad, I assume.
I do. I think Farzad is extremely serious about getting to vendor-vendor interoperability. And I think that's in large part what we tried to do with the Meaningful Use Stage 2 criteria, both the testing criteria and the standards. I think in addition to the vendor-to-vendor interoperability and exchange, I think we also are very serious about making sure that patients have access to their information as well. And so making sure that with the blue button initiative, being able to download information and be able to put it on that smartphone and on that iPad and be able to use that effectively.
Wildly successful blue button. No one guessed it, did they?
No. And you know, the initial round of Blue Button wasn't really about standards and interoperability. It was really about access. It's about just opening up the spigot. And now what we're finding is that by providing very simple structure to that, we have lots of folks that are developing apps and other things that use that Blue Button data. There's actually the ability to take the Blue Button data from your healthcare record, combine it with some of the Medicare Part D medication information and create a mashup, if you will, of all the information that would be relevant. And people can put that on their cell phone. If they end up in a emergency room, they can pull that information up and share it with their doctor. It's really very, very powerful.
I always get amazed, and I guess I get landlocked within the Beltway here, and I have my Washington, D.C. brain on. My wife is a teacher. She went to Oklahoma to Tulsa for a workshop over the summer, a whole week on how to be a better teacher. And she said everyone in the classroom had an iPad, and they're all up to speed, you know, exactly what the technology is about. And so I think about the Blue Book and patients actually wanting that electronic information. Well, guess what? It's very, very popular, and the Blue Button shows that people really do want to have their information. It's important to them, and I think it's your job and Farzad's job is to make sure it's provided to them in a safe and secure manner the way they want it.
Yeah, I think, you know, privacy and security is a fundamental principle that we need to address with the exchange of information. You know, we want to make sure that if patients, if there are providers or other people acting on behalf of patients, they have to be responsible and accountable for making sure that that information is held secure. So we want to be able to provide electronic health records and providers with the ability to do their security audits to make sure that there's the proper encryption, that we've got the right certificates that encrypt and decrypt things appropriately. But at the same time, we want to make sure that patients have access. And so the Blue Button is about patients being able to take that information and to be able to do what they would like with it to be able to improve their care.
Earlier in the show, I talked about Tom Cruise and Show Me the Money. I got to refer to Tom Cruise again. He did this one movie where he had this like this giant computer screen. He was using his hands and moving things around, Minority Report. And people think about the future and, wow, this is kind of cool, moving these things around, everything like this. So my question to you is what about the future of healthcare IT, the future of interoperability? Do you think this is too aggressive a goal, 2013? What do you think in the next 5 to 6 years, what do you think is going to happen to this whole general topic of interoperability and especially with patient engagement?
I think actually we will get vendor-vendor interoperability by this year and next year as we move to Meaningful Use Stage 2. It is a requirement to get the meaningful use incentives, and so I'm confident that that's going to be an important milestone. We started the show by talking about how there was a 17% adoption in 2008. We expect that by 2015 we'll go to 85%. That's our current projections, and so this is 1/6 of the U.S. GDP that has gone from a paper-based system to an electronic system in really less than a decade. It's a dramatic transformation. I think given that, it's hard to predict what the future is going to hold and whether we get to that Minority Report way of moving things around. I do think that some of the best ways to predict the future is to look back. And so if you look back to the Journal of the American Medical Association from 1906 to 1912, there's a whole bunch of information about the most recent technology that had happened around the turn of the century, and that was transportation.
Earthbreaking, shattering.
You know, we had trains and cars, and there's a whole series of articles about the physician's automobile, about how physicians can leverage this new technology to improve return on investment, to make better care, be able to see more patients, and which car should they buy, and whether they should get a chauffeur, or whether they should try to learn to take care of their car themselves. It's a tremendously interesting series of articles. But by 1912, they stopped making those kinds of articles. And do you remember what happened in 1912?
Don't know anything about that.
It was the Model T. And what happened is that the car became not about the physician, it became about the consumer. And so patients now have the ability to get into a car and drive to the doctor's office. I expect the same kind of transformation in healthcare. I think right now we are focused on electronic health records, but there is a point in time in which the Model T of health IT is going to happen. And patients are going to be empowered with devices, be they smartphones or websites or cloud or whatever it is. There's going to be a transformation, and I think patients will be at the center, and there will be this transformation that will occur in the healthcare sector.
I'm kind of an ageist here. I think a lot of old geezers like me are going to go into a physician's office and fill out those 8 pages, but my kids may walk in and go, well, I've already done this several times. Just here, it's on the thumb drive. It's right here. And maybe the younger physicians go, okay, and maybe it's an age thing. In 1912, I was just thinking, I wasn't born in 1912, but I was thinking about President Wilson, actually, the transition there. We're going to have to take a quick break and have you back in the studio in 6 or 8 months, talk more about this change. I'm sure, you know, with this rapid adoption going from 17% to 85%, there's going to be new challenges and new opportunities for discussion, this whole area of healthcare IT and interoperability. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Dr. Doug Fridsma, Chief Science Officer, Office of the National Coordinator at HHS.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.